Unrelentlessly positive.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever.
It indicates.
Indicative?
Hey, can we focus?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Matinere on the board. And it's Wednesday, so Greg Bach is here. And we're very excited for our next guest. Tom Still is the president of the Wisconsin Technology Council, which is the science and technology policy advisor to the Wisconsin governor and legislature. He is a former newspaper editor, special projects coordinator, and reporter who continues to write about business, technology, and public policy.
So accomplished.
Tom Still, welcome to Ask Goes Wisconsin. Oh, I think you're still muted.
Hey, thank you very much, everybody. Kristen, Greg, Jane, thanks for the time here.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thanks for joining us. You know, it's funny because I feel like whenever I'm reading about business or technology or innovation or entrepreneurship, I usually see a quote from you. And so I finally was like, we should just get Tom on the show and talk about the things that are happening when it comes to entrepreneurship. And like, so I worked in tech. I worked in Silicon Valley for 6 years. And so I'm always very interested in the things that are happening in Wisconsin, whether it's VC or the attempt to try to grow our own hub here when it comes to tech and what the benefits of that are for a community and a cities and the state. And so I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yeah, same here. And glad to know that you do have that background. And so it's...
I worked in sales. I'm not an engineer.
that's just fine. That sales is a big part of it. And, not that we want to even want to be a Silicon Valley, but we want to do a lot of things a lot better, I think.
So. Absolutely. So I guess for people who are unfamiliar with WTC... And beyond the description I just kind of said, would you describe what Wisconsin Technology Council does?
Well, we have now been around about 20 years, and we are, you got part of it just dead on. I mean, we do have a policy side, and that continues to really be a big thing in terms of what we work on. So beyond that, networking is a big part of it in terms of events, things that we do to bring people together at different forums. They can be conferences, they can be luncheons, they can be projects around the state. I mean, we're doing something now to promote entrepreneurism in smaller communities around Wisconsin. But I think, too, we're also kind of a communications firm writ large. I mean, just in general about what's going on for tech in Wisconsin and promoting the fact that we need to do more and do better. We work with a lot of investors. We see them. We don't run a fund ourselves, but that makes it sort of like Switzerland, you know? I mean, we can be neutral in terms of recommending where some things can happen.
So that's different. So, like, we've talked to, like, WDC, and so they, like, their innovation fund, that is something totally different as far as, like, working with VCs. And so it's more of the advocacy and promotion of versus the actual, like, investments of.
Well, let's put it this way. Well, for starters, we're a partner with WDC. We're a key strategic partner, which means they turn to us at times for different things, especially on the investment side, because our Tech Council Investor Networks has, I don't know, 35-ish members across the state, angel funds, angel networks, venture capital funds, corporate funds, some individual investors. And these are the kinds of folks who tend to show up at our events and see those companies that are pitching. And so we try to provide platforms for that all the time. So, again, we don't have a fund. We don't invest ourselves. But we try to make it easier for those investors who are in this space to do so.
Absolutely. And so you had an op-ed on Monday, right, that ran in the Wisconsin State Journal that was titled An Entrepreneurial Tale of Two Cities, From Milwaukee to Friendship. So yeah. I guess what would you say are the similarities and the differences between what you see when it comes to entrepreneurship in Madison, Milwaukee, even Green Bay, versus what's possible and what's already happening in small towns like Adams Friendship?
Sure. Well, and, you know, there's some obvious differences, right? Critical mass, number of people. Typically, in some of our bigger cities, we see more tech-based entrepreneurship. We may see ideas that are more likely to attract angel and venture capital. Not that it's exclusive, but it could be a bit more likely. But in terms of similarities, boy, there are a bunch. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you gotta have a business plan. You need to know how to pitch to investors of all types, not just angels and VCs.
Your family, say.
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Family,
friends, and founders.
Yes.
The joke about that is the fourth F is fools. So, so that can happen too. But they all need funding at some level, right? To get up and down. They need to have the mechanics down about how they actually launch a business, you know, both legally and structurally. They have to be able to pivot. You know, if they get partway in and they see that their opportunity maybe lies in a slightly different direction, well, okay, let's go in that direction. They have to be good at building teams. You know, whether you're a tech company in Milwaukee or a restaurant in Adams Friendship, you're going to need to have a team and know how to recruit that team and the advisors as well. So that's another piece. But I think the biggest thing probably that nets them all together is perseverance. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to stick it out and realize it's going to be potentially a long haul. So I think there's some commonalities in all those kinds of places.
And so one thing is, how much do you think, like, the differences of what is needed when we're talking about a small business start, like, type of entrepreneurship versus a startup, and like the intentions behind, like, how fast you're going to grow, I guess, industry, like, how much overlap is there? Because obviously both start at zero. They start at one, or they start at two or three people, like founders, right? But the intention on how big they want to get, how fast they want to get that big. Do you think there is overlap, or should they be treated really differently? Because I think sometimes when I'm reading about the different things WTC or WEDC is doing, the media sometimes lumps them all together. And to me, I think of them as very different.
Well, they are, especially at that funding level. Like, I see really kind of four types of entrepreneurs. And there's three that are almost in a mom and pop category.
Okay.
You know, there's your basic Main Street type business. There are what I would call social entrepreneurs, people who are pursuing some kind of entrepreneurial interest because they have a related social interest. You know, you might have children with a food allergy, and therefore you write a book about food allergies and try to sell that.
Okay.
It might be almost a hobby related entrepreneur. Somebody who's an avid biker, for example, decides to start a bicycle shop with, you know, different sort of facets that maybe aren't otherwise readily available in the marketplace. The type you're talking about, Christian, I call gazelles. They are the ones who they try to get off to a fast start, and they have it in their head they're going to be the next Amazon or the next whatever, right? And that's good. And they're the kinds of folks who tend to add a lot of employees over time. You know, the Main Street mom and pop kind of thing I talked about, that may be 2, 3, 5, 10 employees, something like that. But the classic tech-based startups usually have it in mind. They're going to wind up adding a bunch of employees and adding a lot to the economy in the meantime. In fact, in the United States, most net new jobs, practically all of them really, and this is from the Kauffman Foundation and others, most of those net new jobs are created by young companies that are 1 to 5 years old.
Really?
Yeah. Big companies add jobs, shed jobs all the time. It's a little more level in terms of where they wind up in terms of total jobs. But the young ones are the ones that are really pushing the economy forward. Sort of a phenomenon of creative destruction. You know, all these new ideas and products and processes are pushing some of the old out. And so that's why those kinds of companies do add jobs, and because it really is innovative and something new.
That's also exciting. We're talking to Tom Still, who is the president of Wisconsin Technology Council. Did you have a question?
I mean, I, for me personally, like I'm listening to this, I'm like, yeah, because I'm a co-owner of a business and we have created jobs, and it's very exciting when you think about it. You sit back and you go, oh yeah, those bartenders, we've created some jobs. We're paying money to these individuals to help. You know, it's exciting, and you know, we're making our step to a next phase. So all the things you're talking about, Tom, are in my head. Like, all right, our presentation, our pitch, our everything, bringing in people. Yeah. I mean, we've asking family, hey, do you want to give? Again, but like having an exciting, I mean, it is very, very exciting. And if anyone's listening to this right now and you have an idea, it's like, go for it. Like, try, like at least try, put it in front of somebody and be like, hey, what does this business plan look like to you? Find someone you trust and take the criticism and move forward if you can. It's exciting. It's fun.
It is. And congratulations, Greg, for what you're doing there. I mean, you're sort of an icon of this kind of thing. I mean, you.
He said it that, folks. I'm an icon.
Yeah. Well. Okay. There we go. Yeah. I mean, you truly are, because you kind of captured it in a few words about the excitement, the sense of accomplishment, the notion that you know you're doing some good stuff, and especially for others, not only yourself but for others.
Yeah.
And hopefully those family members who invested, by the way.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. They get free tickets.
There you go.
All right, we got to take a break quickly. But when we come back, Tom, I'd love to talk to you about what does Wisconsin need in order for these new companies to be competitive, to get started, both from a policy, but also investments, and even my favorite question of, you know, Wisconsin humility and how much that sometimes gets in our own way. So our guest is Tom Still, who is the president of Wisconsin Technology Council, and we'll be back in just a moment. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. We got Greg Bach here, and we are talking to President of Wisconsin Technology Council, Tom Still. And so, Tom, you know, we're close to the end of the budget. We talk a lot about politics and government and stuff on this show. And so what do you think, because obviously it works together, right? The business and our economy can't work without the laws and regulations and what's going on in Madison at the Capitol. And so from your opinion, as long as, you know, in your position, what does, when it comes to technology or innovation and business, what role does government need to be playing? And what do we as Wisconsin need? Like, if you had to put a priority list to really make us competitive and put an environment where we can be creating more companies?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the question. Let me actually go back to my misspent youth as a journalist. That's where, you know, I spent a lot of time doing things that I covered business, but I also covered government. And as an editor, same thing. And so for starters, I think we need a generally, and we saw some good examples in the budget, but more bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. There are some things that got done in this budget, which I think the governor is expected to sign yet today.
Yeah.
With vetoes, I'm sure.
Totally.
But there were some things that happened that were pretty good. And so there was, for a while, I think there wasn't much of that happening. So bipartisanship in general helps, because businesses, especially those outside the state, look inside of Wisconsin and see, oh, well, okay, they're somewhat functional. Or they might say the opposite. Mm. And so you definitely from a business perspective, you don't, you know, you want them to see and believe that people can accomplish things working together. So beyond that, this is, and there are a couple of examples in this budget round that where we spent some time. Wisconsin's R&D tax credits, for example, research and development tax credits, were not as vigorous as you see in other states.
Okay.
The solution that was sent to the governor, and the governor was supportive early on with his own, should help there. This one specific example. The personal property tax sort of elimination by 2024, also important, because even accountants don't like it and they make money on it. I mean, it's one of those things that's just like, really, you want to count tables and chairs and start, it dates back to pre-territory
days. Can you explain it? We haven't talked a lot about it on the show. Like, what is the personal property tax and why is it something that, I mean, Greg's shaking his head like he knows as a business owner.
My government days too, watching that happen too, people getting very angry and upset about it too. But Tom, please go on.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, you know, you're literally counting all kinds of equipment and doing this somewhat, I think, complicated sort of approach to listing all of that. And so, Greg, you probably see it in your own businesses, but it's not all that productive. It maybe of all of the property tax dollars in all categories, and generally you think of homes, buildings, land, things like that, personal property tax is maybe 5% of the total intake, and the amount of work for that is just, it's just not worth it. So we supported getting rid of that. Things like we think Wisconsin should think about it, more incentives for having data centers located here. And there will be some that are going to be, you know, located here. Rural Wisconsin, broadband's still an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some great improvement going on. We've seen it progress a lot during our time here. But, you know, that Main Street business in wherever you're at,
Adam's friendship. Yeah.
For Adam's friendship, right? Well, maybe with the right connections, you can make that a business that's more than just Adams County. It could be the rest of the state. It could be the rest of the world. And in fact, right now, they're very excited that some things are going on there. So that was, I think, a good piece. But I think we still need to work on some of the investor credits that have happened in Wisconsin. And there's been some good things. We were a part of getting passed and took effect in 2005, investor tax credits for investments in certain types of companies.
Okay.
And that's worked, and it's been actually copied in some other states. We were a part in 2013 of passage of something called, it was a different act, Act 41, all these legislative numbers, sorry. But it led to something called the Badger Fund of Funds, which is exactly that. It is a umbrella fund with regional funds around the state. But the rest of the world's not standing still, right? Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be a greater recognition that whether it's Indiana, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, all of our neighbors, that they're doing a lot more and investing a lot more. So I think that's one thing that did not get accomplished in this session. The governor proposed something. The legislature for a while had some other plans, but I frankly think a lot of things just got caught up in the rush of the budget.
Yeah.
And then finally, I think we need to make sure we're investing on the education side, especially higher education side. I was encouraged to see that the UW-Claire with their new health science building was approved. The College of Engineering new building in Madison, I think, still needs to happen. It's not dead yet. It wasn't in the budget. But I'm hopeful that people will see this is all about creating the workforce of the future.
Yeah.
You know, for that building will add 1,000 new graduates per year once it's up. And the workforce needs engineers of all types and around the state. So I think they'll yet come together there. So I think that's what we need.
That's a great, that's
at least in part.
Very thoughtful, well-rounded response. And hopefully we can get that. Because we only have a minute left, but talking about engineering, Wisconsin has one of the biggest nuclear engineering programs in the country. And your guys' next event is about fusion technology, right?
Yeah. July 18th in Madison, the Sheraton Hotel here. It's a luncheon. We're going to bring in people, talk about fusion. And we're going to try to make it as ungeeky as possible.
I was
going to
say, make it as sexy as possible. Tom Still, thank you so much for spending time with us. He is the president of Wisconsin Technology Council. We'll have to have you back soon.
Oh, would love it. Thank you, Kristen, Greg, and Jane. Take care.
Have a great day.
Bye.
All right,
you
we're
going to
take a break.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Interesting people, they know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. We are here with Greg Bach. And along with our next guest, who Dee and Andy Hall founded Wisconsin Watch, which we have interviewed many journalists on this show.
We do great reporting.
We've talked about their many of their stories since, actually, today's our year anniversary. We'll talk about the next segment. But they started Wisconsin Watch in 2009 with a mission to protect the vulnerable, expose wrongdoing, and explore solutions.
Sounds like superheroes. I love it.
The couple has announced last month that they are retiring. And so we thought we'd have them on to talk about the origin of Wisconsin Watch, but also what's next. And so welcome to the show, Dee and Andy.
Thank you so much.
And so it's great, so great to have you on here. So I guess, can you tell me before pre-Wisconsin Watch, what were you two doing?
Well, we met back in the 70s. Working at the college paper at Indiana University in Bloomington. And we both ended up with jobs after college at the Arizona Republic in Phoenix. Worked out there for 8 years. That's where we actually started to date, got married, started a family, wanted to move back to the Midwest to be around the relatives. Ended up in Madison. I worked for 18 years as an investigative reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. Dee worked there for 24 years before she made the jump to come to Wisconsin Watch. So I was the first Wisconsin Watch employee in January of 2009, and Dee was a co-founder and volunteer for those 6 years. While she kept a steady paycheck while we, you know, found out whether Wisconsin Watch was going to be a thing.
And so what was... I mean, to a certain extent, because what is time? 2009 doesn't feel like that long ago, but also like how quickly media moves now. What was the landscape like in 2009 in Wisconsin that made you feel like we need this? Like this, what Wisconsin Watch does and the investigative journalism that Wisconsin Watch does and the training they do of journalists, like what was missing that made you think, like had the vision of like, we need to be start this?
Well, I would just say, first of all, I was nearing age 50 and was, you know, maybe having a little midlife crisis. Just wanted to make sure, you know, being aware of the fragility of life and all of that, make sure that I was doing things that I was passionate about. So really, it started kind of with a self-focus and thinking about how I could continue to pursue my passions for investigative reporting and teaching. I had taught a number of journalism classes at UW-Madison. And Dee and I had, you know, talked over some business models that were evolving, but they were really national investigative centers in the nonprofit world. And we started to talk about, hey, maybe we could start something in Wisconsin, but instead of focusing on the whole country, it would focus just on Wisconsin, and it would also have a training mission so that we would be working with students.
And so how was that? So basically how we see it today, is that always kind of been the original vision, or has there been some changes over time of like pivoting or changing direction?
Well, I can answer that.
Okay.
So we started out with Andy was the first employee, and then we had two, and then we had three, and then for a long time we had four, and then we had five, and now we have over 20 employees. And so it's really grown very quickly and a lot. And what we're able to do now, we are able to, in the early days, we relied very heavily on either students who are still attending the UW-Madison or other colleges, or very early career journalists. And now we are able to hire more veteran journalists. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to do a lot more stories, first of all, many more stories, but also the kinds of stories that maybe a young journalist would not be able to tackle very easily. And so we've deepened our bench a lot, and we've also, you know, made the team bigger. And so that those things are dramatically different from the start when Andy was the first and only employee.
Just the only person doing the investigations.
And I would just add to what Dee said that, you know, the overall values that we tried to adhere to, those have changed basically not at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Since we started, protect the vulnerable, expose wrongdoing, explore solutions. Dee and I wrote those down in 2006 or 2007 when we started scheming this whole thing. But the organization's overall work has evolved some over time. There's still a commitment to investigative journalism and training the next generation of investigative journalists. And news entrepreneurs, still a commitment to informing the public and strengthening the democracy. But as we have seen the alarming rapid erosion of the capacity of traditional news sources to continue to keep communities informed, Wisconsin Watch has taken on more of a role of trying to rebuild local news in Wisconsin, starting off with an experiment with Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service and our News 414 texting project in Milwaukee, and now in Green Bay and the Fox Valley, something called the New News Lab, like Northeast Wisconsin News Lab, with five other for-profit and nonprofit news organizations, trying to find some ways to improve the and expand the quality and quantity of local news around the state as well.
Which is interesting because that's also what we're trying to do with civic media, with the radio stations, yes. Trying to, like, where there's the news deserts and what a crisis that is created as far as information and informing democracy. Mm-hmm. And I guess that kind of leads to my next question, is the state of media in general and how you fund it. And so you guys are nonprofit and mm-hmm. have grown over time. And obviously that comes through donations and grants. And so, from your experience of obviously spending decades at Wisconsin State Journal, which was, I'm sure, just like Journal Sentinel, and so for so long it was ad revenue, and I think more and more, whether it's radio or newspapers or TV's maybe doing okay, but like the ad revenue model for a lot of media companies feels broken. And so do you yeah. think more and more good journalism is going to rely on grants, donation, benevolent, you know, very wealthy people yeah. who just believe in the mission? Like, is that kind of where nonpartisan objective reporting is going to have to live?
Absolutely. Yes. That's where we're at. And it's going to be crucial that foundations, individuals, and that includes individuals who can send in $5 mm-hmm. as well as individuals who can write 6 and 7 figure checks. It's going to be critical that they, as well as corporations that care about the quality of life and recognize actually that a strong journalistic sector and a vibrant democracy are essential for their corporations to thrive. We need all of those, the individuals, the foundations, and the corporations to step up and support journalism through donations, through corporate sponsorships, through grants. All of those are needed. And at the same time, it's essential that journalists figure out how to better serve the public through collaboration, through doing a better job of listening. You know, even in the, you know, those wonderful times when we had bigger budgets, earlier days when Dee and I were working at bigger newspapers, we didn't necessarily do a good job of listening to the public or getting our stories out to people who needed the information the most. That information should be available at no charge to others, to the public. And that's always been a commitment of ours at Wisconsin Watch. So there are lots of ways that all of us can do a better job of making sure that information, reliable information, is available, that it's made available for free, and that we build the right business practices to protect that for the long run.
And I should say, too, that when we started, Andy was one of the founders of the Institute for Nonprofit News. And it was, what, 24 members or so back then? And now it's got over 400.
Oh, wow.
So this nonprofit news model is growing. It's growing in a bunch of different ways. There are several state-based news outlets like we are, but there are also issue area-focused, environmental, health-related, you know, science, those kinds of niche, you know, mostly websites, but also some print and radio, audio outlets. So there's just so much that's happened since 2009. It's really amazing. But yeah, the challenge does remain making all of that sustainable. There was somebody who, I think it was INN, estimated that the number of people employed by nonprofits now rivals the Gannett news chain, which is hard to even imagine, but it's, so that's how much it's grown. And so we are, that sector is growing at a time when the commercial media continues to constrict. So we do need to find ways to keep supporting that, because that is the wave of the future. It's not that commercial media will go away. I hope it survives and thrives. I mean, we spent most of our careers in for-profit media organizations. I still wish that, you know, the Wisconsin State Journal had 160,000 people subscribing on Sundays, but that isn't the truth anymore, and they can't really sustain that size of operation. So we got to figure out a way to get the news to people and make it sustainable.
Absolutely. We're talking to Andy and Dee Hall, who are the co-founders of Wisconsin Watch and are retiring soon. And so I want to, with the couple minutes that we have left, maybe from each of you, a favorite story that Wisconsin Watch published since 2009 that sticks out, either because it was so fun to do, because of the impact it had once it printed. But maybe, Andy, we'll start with you.
Well, hard to choose. There are many favorite, you know, it's like picking your favorite child, right? But I'll just say the failure at the Fawcett Project, which we started publishing probably about 10 years ago, and it examined in great depth threats to the quality of drinking water in Wisconsin, and I think helped raise awareness about the many man-made and natural contaminants in our water and the need to pay attention to it, ranging from lead in old pipes to bacteria running off the farm fields and into groundwater and surface water supplies. So that'd be my one of the picks, one of the many favorite children.
Yeah. We actually only have two kids, so you have a 50% chance of being a favorite child. So I will tell you my favorite child when it comes to Wisconsin Watch. We just finished the Open and Shut investigative podcast about the power of prosecutors. That was 3 years in the making. It was the biggest thing we've ever done. It was based on reporting that I started over 20 years ago. Phoebe Petrovic, our intrepid reporter, was the host and reporter, producer, and it was a partnership with Wisconsin Public Radio. So, and it's been nominated for some national awards. So
and it's out now? You can find it wherever you find podcasts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we launched last year, but it's always there.
All right.
Open and Shut.
We will link. I'll go back and find the Fawcett story and that story and link it for today's show notes if people want to go listen to that. Well, are you guys nervous about retirement? Are you going to be bored?
Are you going to start a new news service after this?
We will not be starting any new news services, but we do look forward to having, you know, fewer deadlines and more time to save her life. But you know, I do want to emphasize too, I'm staying with Wisconsin Watch for 6 more months to assist with the transition. We believe Wisconsin Watch can and will thrive for a long, long time. There's an orderly transition happening, a succession plan approved by our board of directors. Barbara Johnson is a very capable interim executive director. There were 4 senior staff people we hired and trained, and so we have great confidence in the future.
Absolutely. And we will continue to rely and highlight the stories that you guys investigate because it is excellent journalism. Please go check out Wisconsin Watch. Andy and Dee, it was so lovely talking to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Have a great day. All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, I guess we'll talk about the year anniversary of As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. He is Greg Bach.
Greg Bach, icon.
Icon. Is that what you're going to put in your byline now?
Oh, yeah. That's what's happening now, baby.
Tom Still, what have you done? And I guess I think I instinctively knew this somewhere, but I wasn't planning on talking about it because there's always other things to talk about. But July 5th, 2022 was my first show. Was the first? I mean, it didn't. It wasn't the origin of As Goes Wisconsin, the concept. But as a radio
the
show,
radio show, yeah.
It's been a year since we kicked this off. Jane, then what's your year anniversary?
I want to say it's the 15th.
Okay, that
July
sounds
15th.
Right.
Doesn't
yeah,
sound right.
It sounds like it was like a week or so after.
Yep, it was pretty shortly after.
So yeah, but yeah, last year we did 4th of July, and then literally the next day. I think I was here. I had Brian Kelly.
I was
Kelly.
Wondering who, yeah, who was producing for you.
Brian Kelly didn't produce. I think he came on and talked with me. Maybe Luke produced from Madison?
I think so.
Wow.
Now I'm so interested to go back and listen to that episode and see what the
like,
hell
no,
I even talked about.
It.
Yeah, it's probably so cringy. Yeah. That is the thing. I recently saw an interview with Ira Glass. And who is obviously from This American Life fame. And he has this famous quote that's one of my favorite quotes, which is for anyone who does creative, I'm just going to butcher the actual quote, but the general vibe of it is, you know, for anyone who wants to do creative work, there is a gap between your taste and what you want to produce and your skill level. And like, as you pursue anything creative, that is the constant chase, is to have your skill be able to catch up with the taste that you have. Because you get into it because you know what you like and you know what's good and you're trying to make that, but you can't just make it off out of the gate, right? And so I think the best thing you can ever do is constantly be looking at back that you did and go, oh, God, because it means you're improving.
No, I see that. I see that every Wednesday at the open mic. I see people who are like, I know what you're trying to say, but you're not there yet. So please stop saying those horrible things.
But they have to work through it, don't they? Like, you have to get better. How else do you do it besides putting it out there and be like, well, they didn't laugh.
Absolutely. But you also have to then listen to the critiques, the criticisms.
Yeah.
Think about what you're doing yourself. I think a lot of times, you know, not to make this about comedy, but a lot of times people will get on stage, say something inflammatory and dumb, and they'll be like, they just don't understand my comedy. I'm like, no, they don't understand the words you're saying. That's different than comedy. So what can you do to say it differently, get your point across, and, you know, serve the greater purpose? You know what I mean? So, yeah, I get that. It's a constant struggle. And it's a great struggle.
It's a great struggle.
It's a wonderful struggle.
And that's the thing. It's like the pursuit of it and not to give up is part of the game. And,
absolutely.
Like, obviously to have the opportunity. Like, if I, you know, I have the opportunity to be on the radio every day, which is I'm super grateful for. And so I've had the opportunity to get better. And I think I have gotten better the
without
last
a doubt.
Year.
Oh, no. I will. I mean, and without, like, I'm not poking jokes here at all right now. Like, when I started doing the show with you all, what we were doing just on Wednesdays, the way it's evolved over the past, for me, for us, the past 9, 10 months, leaps and bounds. Just that idea of like asking pointed questions, engaging the people listening, getting people enthused and concerned about the things you're talking about, but always keeping a lighter balance to it. And also the thing I was thinking about too with the guests is that one of the things you ask people who do the radio as guests, they can say like, this is going to be a waste of my time because it's, you know, they're going to make cracking jokes and blah, blah, blah. It's like we always keep the topic light or keep it focused, never wasting the guest's time and never undermining what they're talking about with like haha jokes. You know, I'll throw a bit in there every once in a while, but I'm not going to be sitting there going, how can I say something funny? How can I say something funny? You know, so I think there's been a real focus on this show that's really, really shown.
And I have learned so much from the guests that we've had over the past year. It's just astonishing. How much of that I will retain, I have no idea. But every day is exciting because there's a new learning opportunity. And again, it's just been so interesting.
I feel like I probably sound douchey when I say it, but the amount of times that like in conversation a day like yesterday where you're meeting people and you're just, you know, making small talk and things like topics are coming up, the amount of times like, well, I interviewed a person who, and it's like, shut up.
I think that's,
but it so often is now of like the amount of fascinating people who are living in Wisconsin, doing work in Wisconsin that we've gotten to talk to over the last year and sometimes more than once. That then comes up in conversation as far as like a topical thing of like, well, I talked to this person at this one point who's doing this, this, and that. And it was fascinating.
It's never a brag. You're doing it to contribute to the conversation.
See, and I feel confident now I can discuss ginseng and cranberries with just about anybody. Yeah.
Have you?
Yes.
Have you brought it up?
I brought up ginseng.
She has forced it in almost every conversation we have.
Hey, you want to know what I know about ginseng? It's really cool.
My car broke down. Did it break down in Wisconsin? Wisconsin's the cranberry capital of the world. I just need AAA's number, Jane.
So here's to hopefully many more years.
Yeah.
But our year anniversary. And then it'll be for As Goes Wisconsin as the concept. It'll be 4 years in March.
And we're celebrating our 2-year friendship anniversary coming up soon. And I just want to say this. I know we got to get out of here soon, but I just want to say this. I want to say thank you and thank you, Jane, for the opportunity for me to do this with you every Wednesday.
I know.
It has been really fun. And it has led to opportunities, career growth, and me being a part of this civic media family now.
And I need to say thank you also to Kristen Bry, who brought me along and welcomed me and just everyone at Civic Media. And it's been just lovely.
Yeah.
Just lovely.
You're doing good things, kid.
We're doing things.
Yeah.
We're building things.
Yeah.
So that's the sentimentality cheese moment of the day. Maybe that's a new segment.
Cheese of the day.
Cheese of the day. Something that's like super cheesy, but feel good.
With some good background music.
Maybe we can get someone to sponsor it. Get Sargento to sponsor it.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Hey, Clock Shadow Creamery, you're out there. I know you're listening. Sponsor the cheese section.
But that's for that. Happy to be here for the last year.
Yeah.
Learned a lot.
Awesome.
And
lots of life changes, too.
Lots of things. Lots,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I got married on this show. I'm going to have a baby on this show. Maybe we'll broadcast it live. Probably not.
Hot pass.
Hot pass. All right. Well, everyone who called in and texted and was part of the show today, thank you. Thank you to Tom Still and Andy and Dee Hall, who are a wonderful guest for today. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always go back and listen to it as a podcast on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. Make sure you download the Civic Media app. Take us with you wherever you go. Find all your stations and all the shows. And we'll be back tomorrow to do a year in one day.
Yeah.
This is As Goes Wisconsin.
One good reason I should need you.